Hello and welcome to Science World. A Spanish researcher says he has found that we humans aren't quite ready to meet ET. The researcher's report indicates that humans are just too stupid and too influenced by religion to be able to handle an encounter with an intelligent extraterrestrial being. While we may not be able to meet ET, the World Health Organization this week did give us some good news and said that we're healthier and living longer than we did in 1990. And astronomers using NASA's Solar Dynamics Observatory recently found an odd-looking, square-shaped hole in the sun. According to NASA, these holes, called corona holes, aren't anything to be worried about. Today, on our one-on-one segment, Dr. Dean Pisnell, the project scientist of NASA's Solar Dynamics Observatory, will tell us about coronal holes. These stories and more are coming up for you on VOA Science Health and Technology Magazine, Science World. A new report by the World Health Organization finds that people are living 6 years longer than they did in 1990. Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva.
The World Health Organization report finds low-income countries have made the greatest progress, with average life expectancies rising by 9 years between 1990 and 2012. WHO Department of Health Statistics and Information Systems Director Thies Boerma attributes the improvements to major successes in the health-related Millennium Development Goals.
Child mortality is 47% down since 1990. Maternal mortality is 45% down since 1990. HIV, TB, malaria all see major reductions in new infections and in deaths. But we also have to acknowledge that many countries will not achieve the Millennium Development Goals. So much more action is needed.
The World Health Statistics 2014 surveys 194 countries. The data show women all over the world live longer than men, and the gaps in life expectancy between rich and poor countries persist. It says declining tobacco use is a key factor in helping people live longer in several countries. The top six countries where life expectancy from birth has increased the most are Liberia, Ethiopia, Maldives, Cambodia, Timor-Leste, and Rwanda. The report cites Iceland as the top-ranked country for life expectancy among men, which is just over 81 years. Japan comes out on top for women who live until age 87. On the bottom of the scale, the report finds life expectancy for both men and women is still less than 55 years in 9 sub-Saharan countries. Dr. Boerma tells VOA spectacular progress has been made in countries where strong government leadership promotes health and health services.
One lesson, though, is that if the political unstable situation resolves, we've seen in many countries a catch-up, really fast progress. Examples, Liberia, which is now our fastest progress country, Rwanda, but also Cambodia.
Dr. Boerma notes such practices as good delivery care for women, family planning, and immunizations are aiding the progress. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Swiss scientists have developed a robotic arm that can catch items thrown at it with split-second accuracy. Science World's Rebecca Ward tells us more.
The researchers say their new lightning-fast robotic arm can catch various sized objects within 5/100th of a second. The mechanized arm has 3 joints, a complex and sophisticated hand with 4 fingers, and measures about 1.5 meters long. As they developed the device, the researchers were inspired by how humans learn things, by imitation and trial and error. Instead of giving the robot specific directions, they showed the robot examples of possible trajectories, and then manually guided the arm to the projected target, repeating this exercise several times. This allows the robotic arm to learn what it needs to do. The wide range of objects used by the researchers to teach the robotic arm how to quickly grab objects included a ball, empty bottle, half-full bottle, hammer, and tennis racket. The objects were selected because they provided the robot with a varied range of challenges to help it decide which part of the object has to be caught that doesn't correspond to its center of gravity, such as the handle of the tennis racket. The bottle provided even more of a challenge, since its center of gravity moves several times during the course of its flight. The scientists from the Learning Algorithms and Systems Laboratory at the Swiss Federal Institute of Technology in Lausanne, Switzerland, say the as-of-now unnamed robot could help with a space junk problem. The device is already connected to the Clean ME project at the Swiss Space Center at EPFL, which develops new technologies to help recover and dispose of the thousands of pieces of potentially dangerous debris accumulating in space around the Earth since the beginning of the space age. Once the LASA robotic arm is installed on a debris-hunting satellite, its job will be to catch flying space debris. The scientists said that for their arm to catch a variety of flying things, it'll need to develop and incorporate a number of parameters to allow it to react to unexpected events in record time. For Science World, I'm Rebecca Wool.
Antarctica seems to have bucked the global warming trend, with portions of it cooling while the rest of the planet heats up. Roseanne Skirbel reports on a new study that explains this in the context of a warmer world.
The key to Antarctic weather is the wind, says Australia National University climate scientist Neroli Abram, the lead author of the study.
They control how far north the rain bands go out of the Southern Ocean. And they also are really important for temperature, and in particular for the temperature of Antarctica and also the Antarctic Peninsula, which is the bit of Antarctica that juts out right into the path of those westerly winds.
That westerly wind belt circulates the continent. The study in the journal Nature Climate Change finds that those winds are now stronger and their path tighter than any time in the past 1,000 years. That change has been especially prominent since the 1940s. Abram and her team reconstructed Antarctica's climate history from ice cores. They conclude the wind has kept a large part of the continent cold, unlike anywhere else on the planet.
But we can explain that because as those westerly winds are getting stronger, they're actually tying the cold air over Antarctica, and it stops warm air masses from being able to get over the continent and help to warm Antarctica. So this example of something that seemed like a climate change paradox we can actually explain by these greenhouse gases that are strengthening the westerly winds and isolating parts of Antarctica.
But they're not isolating the Antarctic Peninsula and parts of the western Antarctic ice sheet that lie directly in their path.
So as those winds have strengthened and pulled in tighter around Antarctica, they're actually bringing warmer air over those parts, particularly over the Antarctic Peninsula, and this is the part of the Southern Hemisphere that's warming faster than anywhere else on Earth at the moment.
Abram says those westerly winds have deviated from their natural course, which would have driven cold fronts into the Southern Hemisphere. Instead, the air is trapped over Antarctica and keeping rain from falling on Australia.
What's been happening over the recent decades is that those westerly winds have been shifting south, and we're getting fewer of those cold fronts and storms coming up and giving that really important rain. And so that's why Australia is experiencing these very severe droughts.
Abram adds the southern ocean winds, which have intensified because of the warmer atmosphere, could revert to a more normal pattern if action were taken to reduce greenhouse gases. Roseanne Skirbel, VOA News, Washington.
Since we just heard about Antarctica, today's Science World Quick Quiz is about the land at the bottom of the world. What percentage of Earth's frozen fresh water can be found in Antarctica? Is it A, 90%, B, 69%, or C, 25%? Good luck. We'll give you the correct answer in a few minutes from now.
This is Science World on VOA. Be sure to visit our new website and blog at voanews.com/science.
Well, looks like the political tensions that have recently developed between the U.S. and Russia just may have an impact on joint space projects after all. With more on that, here's Science World's Bob Doty.
Russia says it will withdraw support for the International Space Station, the ISS, by the end of the decade, in response to U.S. sanctions imposed on Moscow for annexing Ukraine's Crimean Peninsula.
Deputy Prime Minister Dmitry Rogozin announced the move Tuesday, calling Washington, quote, an unreliable partner, which politicizes everything, end quote. The U.S. had requested prolonging the use of the ISS until 2024. Russian Soyuz spacecraft have carried all astronauts to and from the space station since 2011, when the United States ended its space shuttle project. Rogozin said the Kremlin will also bar the U.S. from operating GPS satellite navigation system sites in Russian territories beginning in June, as well as using Russian-made rocket engines to launch military satellites. The latest Russian sanctions come as the U.S. moves forward with plans to deny export licenses for high-technology items that could aid Russia's military. The United States and its European allies have imposed visa bans, asset freezes, and other penalties on a long list of Russian corporate leaders and advisors close to President Vladimir Putin since Moscow voted to annex the Crimean Peninsula in March. This is Bob Doty for Science World.
U.S. researchers say a common antidepressant drug appears to slow the growth of brain plaques that are the hallmark of Alzheimer's disease. Jessica Berman reports.
All people produce amyloid beta, or A-beta. The protein is overproduced and not sufficiently eliminated in those with Alzheimer's disease. So rather than being swept away normally, A-beta forms clumps in the brain of Alzheimer's disease sufferers. Previous work by researchers at the University of Pennsylvania and Washington University in Missouri suggested the antidepressant drug citalopram, which goes by the brand name Celexa, could affect the amount of A-beta that's produced. Yvette Shaleen is a professor of psychiatry at Penn's Perelman School of Medicine. Shaleen led two sets of experiments with the antidepressant. One experiment involved a group of mice genetically bred to have brain plaques. 2 months after the rodents were given citalopram, Shaleen says researchers used a microscope to see what was happening to their plaques.
And what we showed was a dramatic drop in both the number of new plaques that developed and much less growth in the existing plaques.
The drug had no effect on existing mouse plaques. Researchers also conducted a human trial involving healthy individuals ages 18 to 50. Writing in the journal Science Translational Medicine, investigators noted a 38% reduction in concentrations of amyloid beta in the brain and spinal fluid of those given a single dose of Celexa. Also, the treated volunteers produced less A-beta protein. Again, the University of Pennsylvania's Yvette Shaleen.
Whether that leads to actually delaying or preventing Alzheimer's disease is a whole different question. But we do have a mechanism for decreasing the amyloid concentration.
Shaleen says the next step is to enroll healthy older adults in a study to see whether treating them with the antidepressant drug for 2 weeks reduces production of amyloid beta for a longer period of time. Jessica Berman, VOA News, Washington.
Are we alone in this mammoth universe? Or are there other life forms and civilizations just waiting to be discovered? If there were intelligent extraterrestrials, would we be ready for such an encounter? Science World's Doug Bernard tells us about a new study that found some surprising answers to that question.
A new study conducted by a Spanish neuropsychologist said that we humans aren't smart enough and are too influenced by religion to be able to handle contact with an intelligent extraterrestrial life form. The study was conducted by Gabriel G. de la Torre from the University of Cadiz in Spain. He has also worked on projects for the European Space Agency and the European Science Foundation. For this study, de la Torre analyzed the ethical and sociological implications of a possible human-ETI interaction. ETI, standing for extraterrestrial intelligence. To find out if the human race was ready for ETI, De La Torre sent out a questionnaire to 116 American, Italian, and Spanish university students. The survey was designed to assess the respondents' knowledge of astronomy, their level of perception of the physical environment, their opinion on the place that things occupy in the cosmos, and the likelihood of contact with extraterrestrials, as well as religious questions such as, do you believe that God created the universe? The answers provided by the international group of students showed that the general public's knowledge about the universe and our place within it, even at the university level, was poor. Regarding our relation with possible intelligent extraterrestrial life, De La Torre said that we should not rely on moral reference points of thought, since they are heavily influenced by religion. De La Torre's curiosity about a possible human ETI encounter was piqued by a project currently being considered by the Search for Extraterrestrial Intelligence Institute, or SETI, in California. The SETI project began in the early 1970s with a mission to hunt for radio signals being broadcast by extraterrestrial intelligence. For the last several years, there have been those at SETI who would not only like to listen for signs of ETI, but would like to also regularly send messages to them as well. The proposed project is called Active SETI, and it's also known as METI, or Messaging to Extraterrestrial Intelligence. Since 1974, there have been a number of specific messages from Earth, even a Beatles song, that have been beamed out to targeted areas of the cosmos, all in hopes that an extraterrestrial intelligent being would receive it and realize that we're here too. But there are also a number of scientists, including renowned theoretical physicist and cosmologist Stephen Hawking, who've raised concerns that transmitting these messages to areas light years from the Earth might not be such a good idea. In a 2010 documentary, Hawking said communicating with aliens could pose a threat to Earth. He likened a human ETI encounter to one that took place over 500 years ago between Christopher Columbus and the indigenous peoples of the New World. Either way, deciding whether we should purposely send out messages for possible reception by ETI might be something that's irrelevant anyway. Our radio presence has regularly been transmitted throughout space since World War II, when television, FM radio, and radar were first being used. TV, FM, and radar all broadcast at frequencies that are high enough for their signals to escape our atmosphere and continue outward into outer space, where they could possibly be intercepted by ETI. De La Torre finally said that the question of whether we should broadcast our presence to the universe is one that's global in nature, and debate on this shouldn't be monopolized by a handful of scientists. Calling occupants of interplanetary craft. Calling occupants of interplanetary. For Science World, and anyone else listening in the cosmos, we've been observing your Earth. I'm Doug Bernard.
Let's find out if you have the right answer to this week's quick quiz. A few minutes ago, we asked, what percentage of Earth's frozen fresh water can be found in Antarctica? Is it A, 90%, B, 69%, or C, 25%? The answer is A. According to the U.S. National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, 90% of Earth's frozen freshwater is in Antarctica. About 9% covers Greenland, and the small remainder is located at locations throughout the world. Thanks for playing along with us on this week's Science World Quick Quiz. We'll have another brain teaser for you again next week.
You're listening to Science World on VOA. You can also find us on the Internet. Our new webpage and blog can be found at voanews.com/science.
Astronomers using NASA's Solar Dynamics Observatory were recently making observations of the sun when they couldn't help but notice an odd-looking square-shaped hole in the sun. What they saw wasn't really a hole in the sun itself, but an opening in the sun's atmosphere called the corona. While the coronal hole may appear ominous, Dr. Dean Pesnell, the project scientist for NASA's Solar Dynamics Observatory in Maryland, says it's nothing to worry about. Dr. Pesnell joins us for today's one-on-one segment to talk about coronal holes. Is this something that we on Earth should be worried about?
It's not something to be worried about. It's something to marvel at, that the sun which is kind of round, would come up with a square shape on its surface. But a coronal hole is simply an area of where the corona has less density than average, and it forms no end of different shapes. And it's just like watching clouds in the sky. They're fun to find.
Now, the corona is the atmosphere of the sun, correct?
It's the outermost layer of the atmosphere, yes.
What is going on the surface of the sun to produce this coronal hole?
We're still working on that. We're pretty sure we think that the coronal holes are areas where old sunspots used to be. And as the sunspots decay away, they leave behind some magnetic field that all kind of points in one direction. Sunspots are areas where you get all these cool-looking loops, and that means it's going from a north pole to a south pole. And it, just like on a magnet that you would look at with iron filings on the Earth, we see these coronal loops joining those poles. And as those sunspots go away, it tends to leave one set of north poles or one set of south poles, and over time, they just blow away all the stuff that was above in the bright loops, and leaves this nice little coronal hole.
Does the appearance of coronal holes have anything to do with the solar cycle?
We tend to see coronal holes best during times around solar minimum. There's one coronal hole, actually a pair, that form at the top and the bottom of the sun on the north poles and south poles, and those things will be up there for about 5 years.
How long do these coronal holes usually last, and what causes them to disappear?
We've seen them last for a couple hours. And we've also seen the ones at the top of the sun will last several years. And the square one might last a half rotation, maybe a rotation of the sun. So that's about when the sun spins around once in about 27 days or so. And so that might last about half that, a couple weeks.
One thing I'm curious about, and I'm really interested in space weather, and I understand that with a coronal hole, quite a bit of solar wind comes out. Does it have effect on space weather?
Yes, because the way coronal holes are built, they tend to have the fast solar wind coming out of them. Material is heated and leaves the sun, and it comes out moving, you know, at a fairly good clip, up to about 700 kilometers a second, whereas the other part of the solar wind, which comes from the sunspot areas, tends to be a lot slower than that. So we get the fast solar wind from the coronal holes, and that can get here to the Earth, and it can cause aurora. Tends not to be one of the larger space weather effects, but it does have space weather effects during certain times of the solar cycle.
In recent videos and some photos of the coronal hole, some spectacular videos as a matter of fact, it appears dark because there's less light in the ultraviolet range of the light spectrum. So if the area of the hole is producing less ultraviolet light, is it producing more light of other parts of the spectrum?
We don't actually see coronal holes in any other light. So we have to find them in the extreme ultraviolet. So no, it does not appear brighter in other wavelengths of light.
And finally, Dr. Pesnell, this isn't the first time that a coronal hole has been observed. I understand that last July, an incredibly large one was spotted, as well as in 2012. So they're not really a rare occurrence?
No, we will often have coronal holes on the sun on a regular basis. And it's even fun to look for them. We found one that looked like a rubber chicken. And we found another one that looks like a Cocopelli, which is a flute player from the American Southwest.
It almost sounds like when we look up at the clouds and see shapes and figures there.
It's very much like that. You can see what you want in coronal holes. Coronal holes are a normal part of the solar cycle, and they will, as new magnetic field comes out from inside the sun, the boundaries of the coronal hole will be closed up, and it'll just become a new area of sunspots.
Does this have anything to do with the poles flipping on the sun?
These are all related to the magnetic field of the sun, and so it does have something to do with it, but it's mostly a symptom at this point than a cause. We're just watching the magnetic field of the sun as the new field comes out of the sun, and now it kind of pushes stuff up towards the poles, and eventually that cancels the field at the north and causes the poles to flip. So it's kind of a symptom of the way the poles flip.
That was Dr. Dean Pesnell, the project scientist for the Solar Dynamics Observatory at NASA's Goddard Flight Center in Maryland. That's it for this edition of Science World. Before we go, we'd like to invite you to visit our new website and blog. The address is voanews.com/science. Science World has been produced by Bob Doty, and I am Rick Pantaleo. Be sure to join us next Saturday and Sunday as we check out the latest in science, health, and technology on Science World.